Welcome. I'm Danielle Sally.
And I'm Eva Fusaw.
And you're listening to Ghost Boss, stories about the freelance afterlife. Hey, ghosties.
Well, hello, hi.
That was a different intro. You went hello and hi.
Well, hello, hi. First off, that's how I answer the phone most of the time.
Is it?
I know you don't answer
I would
the
have
phone.
To call you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but that's how I answer. I know you probably don't get on the phone a lot. I probably
or answer
talk to
calls. Yeah.
Right. I talk to 3 or 4 people probably every single day. And so that is how I answer the phone when people call me. Hello. Hi. I also start a lot of text messages that way. So, yeah, it's just, you know, maybe instead of my weird Mrs. Doubtfire country bumpkin intro like I had for all of season 2. Maybe I'll just do a new one every episode for season 3.
Which is my goal. Oh, I like this. I like this.
We'll see. I'm not doing accents because it's going to get real bad. I'm not good at it.
Right.
It's going to get real weird. I'm going to run out of like okay ones and be like, "Ooh, girl, like you're getting into some odd territory here."
Like
so
all your accents might still end in a southern twang.
Yeah. So I was talking to somebody else about my accent the other day, and they're like, it's not so much like the words you say. It's you end everything like drawn out.
Yeah.
Like,
which
so.
Is part of the southern twang. It's just it drawn is, out.
But I know how to say oil. So
that's
I got
great.
That going for me.
There you go.
I
give my husband the hardest time. He can't. He doesn't hear it. He says pen and pin the same way. And even when I say pen and pin, he doesn't hear the difference. And I'm like, those are different words. I don't
like a writing pen versus a push pen.
Yes.
I barely say a difference. I don't.
No, most Southerners I learn do not say it differently. And okay. I've confused my husband. Apparently, we have conversations a lot where he doesn't know if I need a pen or a pin. But this is a discussion in my household a lot.
Do you have a lot of need for push pins? Like, I can understand
asking
for a writing pen. Yeah. We should do a whole episode on, like a bonus episode, a little short 10-minute one, on, like, words and how we say them differently.
Yeah, like I think that's good.
I say picture, which is correct, but a lot of people around here say pitcher. They drop the C. Pitcher.
Actually, no, I have a question because I was in a client meeting, and these clients were, I think, mostly Virginia, and
that's the South. We could talk about that in the episode too. That's the South.
And I grew up in West Virginia, so not far away. I have always said template. And I'm realizing
they
all say template. And I remember listening to a podcast a couple years ago, and the host was from Canada, and he also said template. And now it's getting, and I was like, these individuals are Virginia. So I'm like, am I just saying the word wrong?
No,
or is it
I
both? Or I have no idea. What do you say?
I say template, but I'm not a good barometer for this because I was raised in South Carolina, but my dad is from California, which is its own thing.
Right.
And then my mother is from Arkansas, which is also the South, but it is like has like a Midwest vibe feel to it because it's not the South the way like
it's the most southern
South
Midwest
Carolina
state.
And Georgia. Yeah. Like, no, it really is. It really is. Like my mother is from the South. I had somebody try to argue with me once who has never like I don't know that she'd ever even been to Arkansas. And she was like, Arkansas is not the South. I was like, I beg to differ because half of my family is from there. I guarantee you Arkansas is the South. It's just like there's deep South and then like the edge South. And then like, we just don't count Florida or Texas. Like they are their own thing.
That's their own thing. Look,
right.
I get it.
It's fine. So
as someone who grew up in West Virginia, again, no one will claim us.
We'll do a whole maps, a little bonus episode on maps too.
We'll give our map.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. So I'm not always a good barometer as far as like, how do you say this word? But I say templates, not template. I also say pecan, even though like I grew up
pecan.
In South Carolina, I don't say pecan. I say pecan.
Yeah. The other one that I actually changed how I would say it is, mm-hmm. I used to always say gala. And
I was gonna ask you about this.
Here said gala.
I say gala.
And since I was, when I first joined the AAF board in Midlands, I was the gala chair. And I would always say gala chair, but they all said gala. So I changed to the point now I have a hard time remembering I used to say gala. And that's another one. I'm like, do I just give this up or do I stick to my guns here?
It's gala. If somebody says gala,
they're
I don't
fancy.
Know that that's going to stand out to me. Yeah, but it's gala. It's gala. Yeah. I don't know. We can do a whole episode on words. I also can't really say the word rural, and I don't think that's just because I'm from the South. I think that's...
No.
It's a lot of R's in a row. Rural.
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 It's like me trying to say y'all. It just... it for some reason...
Y'all?
I said it kind of...
Y'all?
I struggle to say it. I don't know why. I just do. I think I almost said it naturally the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only lived down here since 2003.
You're fine. You're doing great.
Surely
You're
I'll eventually great. Say it. But it just, it flows odd out of my mouth. Kind of like how you just said rule.
Rule. It's funny. I fought saying y'all the entire time I was growing up. Because...
Really? And you're from down here.
Well, but like we moved here from California and like honestly, and I was born in California and there was some talk for a little bit when I was in high school about going back. So like I really.
You didn't want to commit.
Yeah. I mean, like I really didn't feel like the South was my home until I was a little bit older. And so it's funny you say 2003. I think that's about when I gave up and just started saying y'all. Like I just, I was like halfway through college. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah.
And at that point, like I feel now I hear people say y'all who aren't necessarily from the South. So it's not as bad. But like, I remember the first time I went to New York City, I was like 22 years old. And I do oftentimes end up sounding a little bit like the people that I'm around. So like my Southern accent really softens when I go somewhere else or if I'm around a lot of people who don't have a Southern accent. On the flip side of that, when I'm around my mother, I can sometimes sound like a banjo if I'm upset because I just, it's a whole vibe. Anyways, I was talking to somebody in New York City and after like 20 minutes, they're like, are you from the South? I was like, oh, yeah. And they're like, oh, I had no idea until you said y'all. I was like, oh, whoopsies.
Sorry about that.
I'm not always a good barometer for that. But anyways,
hello, hi. Hello,
welcome.
Hi. So today's episode, I was listening back to our AI episode, and you had made a comment on there that about how AI is not taking our jobs until the client knows what they want. And that, I think, hits home to most creatives. And it got me thinking a lot, too, about how we have to navigate those conversations with clients in order to help them figure out what they want, right? Mm-hmm. And so wanted to talk a lot today about how to handle critiques, how to kind of navigate the client's feedback, and getting them to that end place for finally getting to point A to point Z of them realizing this is what they wanted all along.
We're going all the way to point Z. I mean, usually we're like point A to point B. We got 26 steps in here.
We might get to it, like at least D, perhaps.
I'm tired. It's 9:53 a.m. Calm down.
So I think I don't know about you. You're probably going to agree because you do the same thing as me. I always feel like the toughest projects to collect feedback are always the branding projects. I feel that sometimes they have an idea of what they want and they might give you inspiration. Like, I like these type of logos. I like these colors. I like these fonts, blah, blah, blah. And you get to this point, you deliver kind of what they asked for. I usually do a variety. Here's what you asked for. Here's more the direction that I think you should do. Unless they ask for something, they're like, yep, that's exactly, you've nailed it. This is what we should do. And then they see it. And then suddenly they're unsure. They're second guessing everything. They don't know what to do. How do you kind of navigate those conversations during a client meeting? If they see exactly what you told them to do and suddenly they're completely unsure if this is the direction we want to go.
Well, I actually don't get that mostly with my branding projects.
Yeah.
I get it a lot with my website projects.
Interesting.
I think it's because I do like much smaller scale web stuff than you do.
Fair.
So people are doing like just much smaller 5-page little, you know, smaller sites. And so the exploration process is a lot simpler. And I mean, certainly I'll come back to the question because certainly I get some of it in brand development. And honestly, I get it sometimes in collateral too. People get real fussy with me about a flyer. Which is fine, but
Those have
with
to get
web,
printed, so it's tough.
Right. But with web, I think I get it more than branding because sometimes with branding, like people acknowledge like this isn't their arena. And so they don't have as strong of opinions or they really are like, well, you're the expert. I don't really interact with this stuff very much. I don't like have a lot of opinions about logos, so I'm not really sure. Whereas everybody's on a website. Everybody's on a website. And so therefore they all have very specific ideas of what they want and what they don't want. And then, but then they don't always have the language to tell me what they want. And then I make it and they're like, but not this. And I was like, okay. And then we end up walking through some of their ideas, which may or may not make sense from a UX perspective. And then I'm having to like talk them through stuff about like, this is, I want to know if you get this too. A lot of people, when I'm doing web stuff, or really just anything digital, I run into it too with like newsletter design and stuff like that. Everybody's like real obsessed with above the fold, which I get.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
But I like that is such, honestly, in the way like UX works now, it is an archaic thing to be obsessed with above the fold. And I have to constantly explain to everybody, social media and our phones in general have trained us to scroll.
Yeah.
So you do not have to get worried about they're not going to see it because it's not up top. They will see it because they are, everybody's accustomed now to getting there and scrolling. And so that ends up tough too. I have no idea if I've not answered the question, but I think this is important.
Well, because, it is important.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say on that above the fold thing, you know, I usually mention the scrolling too. The other thing I mention, if everything is important and everything's above the fold, nothing's important. And
correct.
Now you've completely lost your user that's coming to the site because now they have too much to to figure out what they need to do. And they haven't even scrolled yet.
Right. I end up explaining a lot decision fatigue and this idea. There was a study that once you get past 6 options, the quality of your decision making skills like rapidly decreases because you have too many things to think about now. And so you really do need to pare it down. And that's important when you're talking about UX and navigation. It's also important, like anytime you're asking the user to do anything, right? Like call to actions, like on even like static collateral pieces. But I also like think about that too when I talk to particularly younger designers who are like just like getting out in the world. I'm like, do not give people like 8 logo options. Do not, because they are going to get too like you've given them too many decisions. You really got to pare it down and give them like, I usually do 3.
Yeah.
4 for really exploring some stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I'm sorry. What was the question? I've gotten way off topic. I'm on topic, just not with your question. This is relevant. I'm not even rambling.
No, it's still relevant.
This is relevant.
Because I was talking about branding, but for you, it's UX design.
It's
and
just
that's
different.
Still,
yeah.
It's still relevant because the question was, what do you do in those situations where you've presented them with what they say they want? And suddenly they're like, oh, this is not it, but they still don't know what they want.
That actually sounds great because sometimes I present them with what they asked for and I know it's not going to work. And they are like, oh, no, that's perfect. That's great. I want to do that. And I'm like, you're not supposed to want to do that. It's not the good one. Not that I tried to make it bad, but what they requested sometimes isn't the best practice, but they really want to see it. And then they pick
they
back because that's what they asked
it,
for.
I feel like.
Yeah, but yeah. then sometimes they pick it. And I'm like, okay.
You do take a risk. It's a risky thing.
You do. But I do. But yeah, I just, if I show them what they asked for and they don't like it, then I use that as an opportunity to kind of, first I ask them, okay, well, what don't you like about it? Mm-hmm. And I encourage them to just start talking to me, because sometimes I find clients get hung up in the language because they don't know how to talk about this stuff the way we do, which is fine. I also don't know how to talk about lots of other things and lots of other industries because it's not what I do. You should have heard me talking to the HVAC repair people over the summer. Although they said I knew more than most people, and I did feel good about that. Yeah. But like I tell them, I was like, just start talking to me or just write your thoughts out if it's via email, because they get a little hung up on like, I don't really know. And I'm like, that's okay. Just throw it all out there because I can probably discern what you're trying to say.
Right.
And then from there, I walk them through, like I take that stuff out and then walk them through like what's probably not working for them.
Yeah. Well, and I do that. I mean, to go back to UX, a lot of when I start with a UX problem or a UX project, it is to identify all of their pain points. I want to know what on your current website causes you the most pain, the most issues. Is it on your end? Is it updating the site? Is it on the user's end? They can't find any of the content that they need. You know, where are your biggest pain points? And so I think hearing where their pain points are actually does help you get to figure out what they want, even though they don't know what they want yet, because obviously they want something that doesn't cause them the issues that they're having on the current state of their website or their logo or whatever it is. They want to make sure there is a significant improvement to eliminate those pain points.
Yeah. And that reminds me of something that I find I do at the beginning a lot of times with clients. So clients come in all shapes and forms and sizes and thoughts and from background. Like there is no universal experience of what somebody's going to come to you and ask you to do. And I say that because sometimes they come to me with, like, they're like, I need a logo or I need a brochure or I need a website or whatever. And that's it. They don't really know. I got a call like that yesterday. She's like, I don't really know. I don't really do this stuff. What should I do? I'm like, okay, which is fine. I'm happy to guide you. That is a big part of what people like you and I offer, is not just the technical aspect of what we do, like physically creating the creative, but we also like offer a lot of guidance and expertise in the entire process. But then sometimes on the opposite end of that spectrum, I get somebody who comes in and is very, very prescriptive with what they want. And don't get me wrong, sometimes a client that knows what they want is a dream, because I'm like, outstanding, like, great, we're all on the same page. But sometimes as they start talking to me, I realize what they've asked for is not actually what they need. And so then I have to like stop them and back them up. And so, and I'm very polite about it, but I'll, you know, we'll be talking, and if, especially if we kind of end up in a tailspin about stuff and I feel like we're kind of running down a path, I'll stop and say, okay, why don't we, like, I have all the notes on everything you've brought me. I have what you've given me. Let's start from the beginning though. What problem are you trying to solve?
Right.
And I get them talking like that. Right. And it's similar to your pain point question. What problems are you trying to solve? And let's explore that. Because maybe printed collateral isn't what you need, but maybe it is. Like, I, you know, print is not dead, and I will die on this hill. Like, I tell people all the time, you get a lot of ROI out of like direct mail now instead of emails, because people get less mail than they do emails, right? But it depends on like what your budget is and what your goal is. Like, you know, there's a whole thing around it. But I find myself asking people a lot, like, what problem are you trying to solve, and getting them to back up from there?
I spent a lot of, it was probably 10, I don't want to say 15 years ago, but it could have been up to somewhere in that range. A lot of time talking people out of doing mobile apps. There was a time everyone wanted an app. And part of it was because there were so many grants out there to produce apps, and they were getting these grants, and they were able, like, we got money to do an app. We got to do an app. And we spent so much time telling them, you know, you actually just need a website, because a lot of times people would make these apps and the usage was just horrible on them. Mm-hmm. Because why am I downloading this app for this very specific reason? It's not like something that I have multiple uses for. It's not integrating itself into my lifestyle. It's just a very niche use for this one topic. And I'm like, you know, I think you just need a website. And so we go down that path and we talk about it. And then they usually almost always realize, oh, you know what? We did just need just a landing page, not even a full site, just a landing page.
Right.
funny. A lot of what we do have to kind of look at them and say, is this actually what you really want? Or did someone higher up come to you and say, you have to have this for some reason? But what's the actual reason?
Right. Or you just tried to solve the problem. I had to take my car to the shop. I didn't guess what was wrong with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I Googled it because I had to wait for a tow truck for 3 hours and I had some ideas. Sure. But I didn't say to the man on the phone, Travis, I think it's something like, because I don't know, man. Travis, my car is doing this stuttering thing and I'm not going to drive it. Right. And so then Travis, that is actually the name of the man that answers the phone to take my car to get to the shop. Travis figures it out for me. Right. Now, if Travis has some marketing problems that he would like solved, he should bring them to me. And then Eva will start diagnosing, giving him some ideas. On the app note, I know I'm probably going to ruffle some feathers of people who listen to this because I do board work with lots of people. And they're probably going to disagree with me, and that's fine, but I'm going to say it anyways. Stop making me download an app for your event. Stop it. I know. Ooh. I know, but it makes me mad. I don't want it. I do not want it. And I don't care if it's an app that I can use next year, because the steps to get out of last year's event into this year's event is like 8 steps. And it's so irritating. I don't want it.
I will say what will irritate me. I'm fine with the apps for events.
Send them all on my face right now.
I'll send it to you, all the issues to you. My issue is when I can only get the information on the app and I can't also get it from a website. That's when I'm like, why can't I just see the agenda on the website?
There is no agenda. They won't give you the agenda.
I want to see it on the website to determine if I'm going to said event.
Because they want to hold it hostage to make you download
their
app.
And
it makes, they are. And it makes me so mad. I hate downloading an app for an event. I've had it. I don't want to do it anymore. Stop it.
Noted.
I'm so annoyed. I know I can do push notification. I know that. I'm aware. But as somebody who works a lot of registration desk, people just walking up to me asking for a piece of paper anyways. Stop making me download the app, number one. Stop making me do it because I'm mad and I don't want to do it. And number two, stop making me help other people at registration do it with their phones.
I hope you know in my head right now, I'm thinking about an upcoming conference that you and I are both attending, and I was about to scrap the paper agenda, and I'm going to print one just for you.
I'm talking about that one, and I'm talking about the big one we go to every summer. I'm mad at both of them.
Noted. We'll make printed agenda. Can it be smaller? I don't want to make a booklet for your conference anymore.
I don't believe in a booklet. I used to do pocket agendas that fit in your badge.
I'm actually a fan of those.
Those are great.
I love a conference that has a schedule on the back of the badge. Oh, that was the best. I realize that gets very complicated because you have speakers dropping out last minute. And that's why we can't have nice things. But
we can if we just put it on a web page and there's a QR code on the back of your badge and you scan it and it goes to the web page, and then I can update the web page and people just have it in their browser and they don't have to download an app. Do not hold the Wi-Fi hostage in the app because I can't download the app because I'm in this dungeon of a ballroom and I can't get to it. And I'm like, I need the Wi-Fi code to do anything in this place. And you're like, yeah, it's in the app. I'm like, I can't get to the app though, because I don't get reception in here. And they're like, but I don't have the Wi-Fi code. It's in the app because a sponsor sponsored it and it's their name. Like, blah, 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 likes to party, hospitality, 2025. I do not care. Just give me the damn Wi-Fi and stop making me download apps.
This is the best rant you have had to date, Leva.
I'm so mad. Stop. Between events and my 8-year-old getting a hold of my phone, 2/3 of the apps on my phone are against my will. I don't want them. Stop it.
Oh. So the kind of gets to the point. Knowing when to push back is key.
Yeah, I'm pushing back against your app, bro. I'm pushing back. Stop giving it to me. Stop it.
I love it. I love it.
Anyways.
You know, I also, the other thing that tends to happen, especially when you have a client that truly, they just don't know what they want and they're really struggling with it, I think is when you have the, how many rounds of revisions are you going to go through to get to that end point? Do you set how many, at the start of a project, do you set how many revisions they get?
Yeah, if it's flat rate, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If it's flat rate, if it's hourly, nope. We can go as long as you want to go. I don't care, man. Sounds great. I usually set it at 2 to 3 is usually, and with a caveat about, like, you know, if it's like fine tuning, like, you know, like small text edits or something like that, that's fine. But I'd have to look up the exact language I use, but it usually says 2 to 3. Edits that go beyond that would just need to be like prior approved.
Yeah.
To be covered under this, you know, and something about like, I reserve the right to renegotiate the fee based on that. Because if we're, let's say we've done round 3 and round 4 is just, oh my gosh, we misspelled this person's name or we got their title wrong. Like, you know,
sure.
We need to update the date. That's fine. I'm not going to get fussy with you about that. But if round 4 is, I don't like the color blue and this whole thing's in blue, that should have been brought to my attention
out of scope
yesterday. Right. And it's funny, like one of my clients, it was a flat rate project and I put in 2 to 3 rounds and then, I'd forgotten because it was fine. Like it was fine. Like the rounds of edits we'd done were really like, we're not like super heavy and I liked this client and I wanted to do more work with them. And like their edits made a lot of sense. I did not feel like they were just touching it to touch it. And I sent back over like the file and then she replied back. She's like, okay, well, we've, you know, made it to our edit limit. So we'll take the file from here. Thank you. I was like, oh, okay.
You're done.
I forgot to tell you, or I forgot I told you that. So yeah, okay.
It's nice when they
do you
they
like
it?
And they're like, yeah. It's like great.
I have gotten to the point with web projects in particular. What I'll do, and you might do this too, but each phase of the project, I tell them how many revisions per phase. Because the reason I do that is because that way they know up front how many revisions they get per each one. But more importantly, I make sure it's clear any additional revisions, any extended time, because I set deadlines on them too with web projects of you guys have to get a feedback to me by this date because I have the full timeline based on the launch date. Any delays in deadlines, any additional revisions, I make sure it's clear that could push back your launch date. Because we've added to the project timeline. And so I try to make sure that's clear. And those individuals, the clients that they have a firm launch date, maybe there's campaign launching, maybe there's a reason for that date that their website has to be finished by. They make sure that they are respecting that timeline. They're getting through it. It's the clients that the ones that are like, ah, this thing can launch whenever. If they're okay with that, I'm okay with that. So, but then they tend to take a little bit longer to get their revisions back to me.
I don't think I've done, I mean, there's some exceptions here and there, but for the most part, I'm not doing stuff that's in phases. My web stuff is so small. Like, it's not phases because it's 4 pages, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just.
Well, and like, right, but, what about if you have a giant, like an annual report? Are you looking at that in phases? Mm-mm. Okay, never mind.
I just do it and I send
just
it to
do
him.
The thing.
And you know, we are very different people. I don't know. When do you need it? When do you need a proof? Or like, I'll be like, when do you need the final? And then we build a timeline. I have a timeline. There's no phases.
Yeah.
Phase one, you give me the stuff. Phase two, I give you something back. Phase three, you tell me what you think. Phase four, I fix it. Phase five, you tell me again what you think.
And this just keeps going until we're done. It just keeps going.
Just keeps going. Phase 12, you ask for an app and I yell at you. No.
No. No app. And I'm not downloading it.
No. I'm not.
Well, and I think the other thing important for especially newer designers or newer creatives in general that we need to talk about is not getting attached to your work.
Yeah. This is not your baby.
It's not your baby. So the feedback that you're receiving is not about you personally.
Nope.
It's about the project at hand. And you're always so good about explaining this, especially younger creatives of when they go on the workforce, about making sure you don't take this personally.
No. This is not personal. And it's hard because, you know, the nature of our work, because it is creative, and that is, you know, tangential to being like doing fine art, and fine art is an extension of you. And so this lives in this kind of weird commercialized space. It is not a reflection of you. When I was 22 or 23, I got my very first job. And I had a marketing director that I reported to, and then he left. And in the interim, I reported directly to the COO of the company. I had a manager, but our whole department reported to him. And I had to go present all these like concepts to the COO, who had a financial background. He's a very nice man, but I show him all this stuff and he goes, "I don't like any of it." And I was like, okay. And then he gave me some he gave me some feedback and it was fine. And he wasn't trying to be rude, but he was like, "I don't like any of this." So I was like, okay. And so because I had to go through that pretty early on in my career, but also like I talk about this a lot, like I had a professor, Stephanie Nace, who's still at USC, and she was the first person I think who said to me, I was probably a junior when I took her class, that said to me, "This is a commercial art. Like you, this is not your art. This is commercial and it is a job." And that really kind of aligned my perspective really quickly. And I'm so glad she said that to me because it is hard to learn that. But I graduated college like having accepted that like this is my job and it's nothing personal. Now, sometimes I got notes on a couple people on how they give criticism, but I can't say it here because they do actually live in the city of Columbia and they might actually listen. So I don't want to be rude to them, even though they're rude to me. but yeah, it's just this is my job and it's my work. And I hope people like it, but I don't get upset like when people sometimes the imposter syndrome creeps in, like if the client's unhappy. But like I'd say like 2% of the time, if that, I'm getting we don't like this, and we might not continue the project, and this just isn't working for us. And usually if that happens, they offer to pay me something for my time, which is nice. Sometimes it's like, well, we didn't really know what they want. But sometimes I can tell, like, they just don't like what I did. And I do get a little imposter syndrome. I'm like, oh, my God, am I doing? And I was like, no, because you got 50 people behind them that did like what you did, right?
Right.
It's hard to learn, but don't take it personal.
Yeah. It's fine. Agreed. It's
fine. You're still great.
The imposter syndrome is very real because they're – and I have to remind myself, too, because when I get the critiques like that, suddenly I'm like, should I even be a designer? Should I just quit?
I'm like, I'm going to just it burn. I'm just going to get rid of my. Well, I don't know about you, because you use Edge as your browser. And between that, the fact that you're probably going to make me download an app in November.
Maybe. I'm just going to say there's an agenda on the website. You don't have to download it.
Well, I'll be at registration. I'm going to have a whole printed thing because I got to know what y'all doing anyways. I got to know where y'all are.
I'll get you a printout.
It's fine. It's fine. I just don't want the app. It's so annoying. It's fine. It's okay. Lauren and I can talk about it. She's going to make me use the app. And it's, I'm going to complain the whole time, but it's okay.
Yeah. It's okay. I think we're used to you complaining the whole
time. Yeah, I'm going to complain. I'm still going to do it because it's got to get done. I'm just going to be grumpy about it.
They're going to be like,
Eva's fine.
Eva's Eva-ing again.
Yeah, she's awake. She's going to do it, but she's mad because she's an eldest daughter, which is how she is.
It's just how we roll.
Just how it is. It's just how it is. Yeah, that's what we have to say. Be nice with your critiques. Don't take it personally. Don't make me download an app.
Yeah. And feedback isn't failure.
Feedback is not. Oh, we should put that on our sticker next year. Feedback is not failure.
Maybe that's the title of this episode.
Maybe feedback is not failure. We'll make a sticker. You'll have to take them next year because I'm not going somewhere that makes me download an app next year.
Done.
Not doing it. Anyways, so that's all we have for this week. I'm not going to tell y'all what's next week because every time I say it, Danielle's like, not this. That's the wrong one. And sometimes I talk about it so long, I have to cut it out. So, Danielle, what are we doing next week? Because I don't know. I have no
Guess
idea.
Guess what? It's
what?
Free. It's time. She always tells you that we're going to have horror stories. And then we never have horror stories. But actually, I'm saying this now. I'm second guessing myself. Is it time?
Oh, no.
It is. It is time.
Yay.
Freelance horror stories. Get those stories to us. You can DM us on Instagram or LinkedIn. Email us at info@ghostbosspodcast.com. And that episode will finally be sharing our freelance. I love that you're finally, I'm not saying it anymore.
I'm not
but
saying
we're finally at episode 4 and episode 5 is time.
Danielle, you know what you should do? You should embed the content calendar in an app and then refuse to tell me what we're talking about.
Works like a charm.
Yeah. I know how to trick me. I know exactly how to trick me. I trick me all the time.
Well, I'll tell you what. After Freelance Horror Stories, we're also going to have our first guest of the season, Miss Lauren Miners, who will also have things to tell you about the app usage at conferences.
We're
going to
argue about app usage, AI, but then we're going to agree about astrology things.
I asked her if she can do a tarot card reading.
I don't think you can do a tarot card reading, like, virtually.
We'll find out.
Okay. I have tarot cards.
Oh, she...
Behind me. Hold on.
I think she's big on them.
Hold on. Are they behind me? I know it's a podcast, but now we do video sometimes.
Well, there's I'll the tell book. You what. As an elder millennial, I'm proud you did the back of your hair.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have to go to YouTube to see that.
I'm a little afraid to stand up because I am wearing jorts on the bottom half of my outfit. But there are my tarot cards are up there. I bought them in high school. And there's a little book that came with them. And there's pen stains all over it because I used to throw it in my backpack.
Well, we might do that when Lauren's on. We'll see. I'll have to ask her. Can we do it virtually?
I'll pull them out. I used to be the girl that would do tarot card readings in the back, like sitting on the trunk of my Nissan Sentra in the high school parking lot.
And now you're the girl on a podcast wearing jorts. This all checks out.
I mean, I am from Aiken. All of this. Every single one of these things checks out. So
absolutely. All right. With that, it was great to talk to you all this week. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with freelance horror stories.
That's right. Maybe your horror story is about an app. If you also hate apps.
I have a feeling yours will be.
And you'll be a guest on the podcast. I don't even have to know who you are. Just be like a fellow app hater is in our midst.
All right. We'll talk to you all in 2 weeks.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.
I don't care. The apps are dumb.
Remember to follow us on Instagram at Ghost Boss Podcast. And also please like and review us on your favorite podcast app.